Hello, hello. This is Osman with the House Einstein podcast. I'm Osman Parvez, and I'm here with Hamish Crabb.
Hello, hello.
And this is House Einstein podcast number 10. And today we're going to do something a little unusual. We're going to be talking about questions that have been posted on a very popular Reddit subreddit called Real Estate. It's the Real Estate subreddit. And as some of you know, Reddit is a very popular social media platform. It's a source of great wisdom and great humor. It's a place to pull the beehive and get sort of crowdsourced opinions. And occasionally realtors are on this subreddit. But one thing I do want to mention is that this podcast is entertainment. And unless you're one of our clients, it's not legal, financial, real estate, or even spiritual advice. It's best to be thought of as humor. And I thought this podcast, given it's Memorial Day weekend, this topic would be entertaining for you to listen to. And we'll try to keep it to an hour and cover some of the most popular questions and situations that have been discussed on the Reddit real estate subreddit. And hopefully it'll be entertaining for you.
Yeah. All right. Should I get to it?
Jump in.
Okay. The first one is, what are some tips when seeking to move to a quiet neighborhood? It's by Puff Puff Pasta. I'm moving, and the biggest goal to move somewhere more quiet. I have reasonable expectations. I know things are expected to get loud around holidays. I know some kids have big birthday parties, and I've accepted these things. I just want to move to a place with regular noise pollution. I'm trying to escape the 7 out-of-control kids constantly screaming, the three different house parties going on with their bass turned all the way up at night, and the neighbor with their dogs locked up barking 24/7. You get the idea. I feel like my expectations are reasonable with the margin of tolerance for special occasions. I'm just a product to a real estate agent, so I know they're going to tell me whatever I want to hear when trying to sell me a house. So I feel like I could make quiet my top priority and still end up in a party neighborhood. What are some things I can do myself or things to look out for when seeking a quiet neighborhood? I know there are traditional recommendations like drive through the neighborhood on weekend nights and stuff, but what are some other tips and tells that aren't always talked about? I've even considered committing to an HOA that has a strict noise ordinance, but never having had an HOA before, I'm not sure how successful that would be. Love to hear some suggestions.
Okay, well, great question. And the first thing I want to say is that if you feel like you're just a product for the real estate industry to consume, you may want to reconsider your choice of a realtor, because you should never feel like that. And there are lots of highly qualified realtors out there, but there are even more numbers, even higher numbers of not particularly well-qualified or experienced agents. And if they're not listening to what's important to you and offering you concrete suggestions in how to achieve your goals, well, you should really find a better realtor and make a smarter real estate decision.
Yeah.
Huge red flag. Huge red flag. But unfortunately, that's the perception out there, that realtors are just in it for the commission, just here to get paid, and will shove you in a house. And while there certainly are some of those people out there, not every real estate agent is wired that way. All right, so that I got that out of the way, and I'll tell you what your options are here, right? You're looking to buy a property, and your question is really, how do I do my due diligence on noise pollution, and how do I select for a property that doesn't have unexpected noise pollution in it? How do I get a quiet property? Well, first and foremost, the best way to control your neighbors is to not have them. So if you really want peace and quiet, and you can afford to do so, you should buy property with as much land as possible and in as remote of a location as possible. That will certainly limit your neighborly noise pollution, although you'll probably still get air pollution from aircraft, sound pollution from aircraft, but at least you can choose a property that's in a secluded location where neighbors are somewhat challenging, meaning that it's challenging. It's hard to even have neighbors when you own a large parcel of land in a secluded location. But let's say you can't do that. You can't afford to do that. Your job is local to a city. Your budget is much more constrained. You're not a billionaire buying hundreds of acres of land to create privacy. You are able to buy a normal property in a house or a condo or a townhome, a normal size lot in a normal or typical city in the United States. What should you do? Well, every state is different. So let me add that real estate is regulated at the state level. And there also may be local, municipal, city level regulations as well. County level regulations as well. So your real estate agent needs to comply with all of those things. But here in Colorado, one of the things I strongly recommend my buyers do is go meet the neighbors. So we usually do this either right before we write an offer or immediately after writing an offer. And I will accompany my clients if they don't feel comfortable doing this themselves. And we'll go ring the doorbell on a Saturday. The first Saturday morning at 9 or 10 a.m., we will walk around and ring doorbells. And we'll ask questions like, how's the neighborhood? Is there anything I should know? Sound is really important to me. Are there any, like, is this a neighborhood where there's a lot of parties? And you will be shocked at how much information you will get. Now, it's sort of like a interrogation of a prisoner in some ways, because you don't know if they're telling you the truth or not. But if there's enough cross-referencing of information, then you can make an educated decision on whether this is accurate or not. What incentives do the neighbors have to lie about whether there's a lot of parties? Well, they could be the partier, right? They may not want to disclose that they make a lot of noise. They also may have a much higher sound tolerance than you. So to them, children playing might be the sounds of nature, but to you, it might be the sound of nails on chalkboard if you have to hear it every morning at a certain time. And so, one of the things I often do is point out trampolines in backyards when we go and look at houses together, because for some reason they become invisible to people and they don't realize the additional implication of a trampoline in your neighbor's backyard. And that usually means kids are back there playing and having a good time, and kids make joyful sounds. That's what they do. They also may cry. They may also yell, and they don't tend to have good volume control. That's why they're outside.
And they do love to scream.
So first things first is use your eyes, right? We're looking for toy sets, play sets in the backyard, toys in the backyard, trampolines in the neighbor's yards. All of those things are indicative of a noisier spot. Here in a college town like Boulder, we're also really concerned with college students and the sounds that college students make when they're partying, which includes loud music and loud drunken gatherings of young people doing what young people do. And so one of the things that I always do, especially if it's a neighborhood like Chautauqua or The Hill, is we walk the alleys and we look in the recycling bins for red cups. I call it the red cup test. And we're looking for not just red cups, but large accumulations of recycled cans, beer cans, wine bottles, liquor bottles, any sign. If the recycle bin is full to the rim with recycled alcohol containers, there's a really good chance you have a partier next door, or you have an alcoholic next door. It could be either, or maybe there's an additional reason why. Maybe they just had a party. We don't really know that. That's not necessarily an indication that it's always a party, but it certainly gives you a heads up on who your neighbors might be. And most real estate contracts don't give you an exit because you don't like the neighbor.
Yeah.
With that said, here in Colorado, the inspection aspect of the contract is almost a blanket exit, right? And your quiet enjoyment, I would argue, falls under inspection. Mm. And even though it's not an inspection of the specific land and structure, it is an inspection of the location. And if you find something unacceptable to you in that investigation, you should terminate before the inspection objection deadline occurs. And again, that's if you have one, right? Not every state has this process. So here in Colorado, we have a 17-page, I think it's about 17 pages, is the agreement, the contract to buy and sell. And it has that inspection period with an objection and resolution process. Usually it's 7 to 10 days if your agent is on the ball with writing the contract for you to investigate not just the house, but the location, which includes the neighbors. We actually had a client, do you remember last summer, who was incredibly sensitive to sound?
Yeah.
And he had us, so we bought a sound meter for him, and he had us literally driving by the house with my truck. I had you in the truck and me with a video camera and the sound meter in the other hand, and measuring objectively how much engine noise was going by with you driving aggressively back and forth in front of the house, because we couldn't get enough traffic to even determine if the sound deadening on the windows and insulation was enough. Mm-hmm. So we don't shy away from clients that have very unique high standards for sound sound standards. But at the same time, everyone's a little different, and your agent should be really respectful of what your needs are. And if they're not, get a better agent.
Absolutely.
So those are two key tips. Check the neighbor's recycle bins if there's an alley, and talk to the neighbors before the contingency that protects your earnest money that's related to what you care about, in this case sound, expires.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, there's typically one day out of the week where the whole neighborhood's doing the yard work or something. Though that should be expected, and given this Redditor's question, I think they're kind of expecting something of that along those lines anyway. So that wouldn't necessarily be a good indicator for them either.
Well, that's true. And here in Boulder, there's a lot of professional landscaping crews that run around, and they whip out their gas-powered lawn mowers, their leaf blowers, and they make a ton of noise for about 20 minutes, and then they move on to the next house. And it can be really distracting and annoying. Some neighborhoods are also much noisier than others. So, like the Hill, if you're near the fraternities and sororities, and you didn't know what you were getting into, your agent didn't do a very good job in helping you learn about the neighborhood, because that's, if you told me as a client, Hamish, that you wanted a quiet spot, there's no way I would put you anywhere close to see you.
No.
You would need to know that if you buy anywhere close to see you, you are seriously compromised in your choice because of this issue. You're not going to be happy because it's not just fraternities and sororities or rental houses that have parties. Young people like to party. There are also events all summer long, all year long, football games, mm-hmm. concerts. Boulder makes a lot of noise. The Boulder is once a year. That one, I think, which we're all looking forward to running. That, I don't know if that counts, but for sure, the route is known on the Boulder Boulder too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Has that ever been a due diligence in your deals or with a client where you're like, hey, by the way, this, you know, on Memorial Day, your whole street's going to be closed up?
If I happen to notice that that's where we are, I have mentioned it in the past that you're on the Boulder-Boulder route. Like that's really, at least the current Boulder-Boulder route, it could change. But that could be something. I mean, personally, it's one day, right?
Yeah.
Most of Boulder loves that we're, you know, have this event. And I imagine most people on the route think of it as a day to whip out the lawn chairs and watch the world go by. Like, what a fun private viewing.
And the majority do, or they're handing out their own drinks.
They're throwing marshmallows. Yeah. They're throwing food at you. They're offering drinks. They're having parties. I mean, Memorial Day here in Boulder is quite the event.
Yeah. For those out of state or out of the area, the Boulder Boulder is a 10K? It is a 10K.
You're running your first one this Monday.
Third.
Your third one. Okay, so you're familiar with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is the largest 10K. As far as I know, and it is quite the party.
Quite. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Enough off topic, right? Yeah. So this next one, not a fun username, just UU23, but trying to sell a house, neighbor keeps talking trash to potential buyers. We're trying to sell a house. The neighbor wants to buy it, but has offered us way below market value. We offered her first dibs at 25K before our list price. She laughed at us and told us good luck. Since then, the house has been shown numerous times by our real estate agent and others. At least half those times, the agent contacted us and said that the neighbor comes outside when they show up and starts talking down the house to them. She says things like, it's in a flood zone, the roof is leaking, it's way overvalued by the county, it needs way more work than what it appears to need, etc. All of this stuff is listed in the listing, the true stuff, some of it she makes up. She tells them that we are trying to sell it without fully acknowledging the work that it needs, which it does need, but still, that's all in the listing and the photos, and essentially telling people that we are lying to them. We are not. She's scaring people off in the hopes that we have no other option but to sell it to her for dirt cheap. She has previously admitted to us that she owns other properties and rents them out. She also said that it's not every day you get to pick who your neighbors are, so she really wants the place but doesn't want to pay anywhere near a fair value for it. We had to drop the price recently by 30K. We've had three showings since then, and two agents said she was still out there trying to talking to the potential buyers. What options, if any, do we have to stop this? I've already personally contacted her and asked her to stop talking to potential buyers, and she said she would stop, but she hasn't.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you really can't choose your neighbors. They can change. And you, how much was this list price? I thought I heard you say it was $25K, which doesn't make any sense.
No.
$30,000 price reduction.
It sounds like they offered her first dibs at 25 under what they'd list the house for. Oh, so okay. they didn't mention the whole.
They didn't mention the actual list price. Okay, got it. Boy, my first piece of advice would be to work it out with the neighbor, right?
Yeah.
Like, hiring attorneys and writing cease and desist letters and making legal threats is really an expensive and not particularly productive way to solve problems. It's usually what I tell friends and family, it's sort of the resolution of last resort. And I think you're basically stuck working it with the buyer, but you also can warn the buyer's agent that the neighbor next door has an interest in buying the property and continues to try to dissuade people from buying because she's trying to tell them the truth. That's what your perception is, that this person is trying to steal the property. So watch out for her because she's likely to try to talk down about the property, even though anything she has to say, I mean, really anything that we know is wrong has already been disclosed. But I just wanted to give you a heads up. So work within the real estate community to try to solve it that way too. But at the end of the day, there may not be a lot you can do. You could also potentially put up a fence between the houses. That's an expensive solution, but it might be cheaper than the legal route. I mean, it is unfortunate that they have that relationship with the neighbor who's attempting to basically steal the property, right? Doesn't want to pay market value and is now trying to personally damage the sale process. I mean, I'm not an attorney. It does sound like they have a legal claim here, or at least a dispute that they could potentially scare her with an attorney who writes a cease and desist letter or something like that. So they probably should consult with an attorney just to see what their options are on this, because clearly they're getting damaged by this neighbor who's, I mean, at least in their opinion, they're getting damaged by this neighbor. And also, you know, even if the neighbor doesn't come over, even just talking to buyer's agents who now know there's a cranky neighbor next door, well, nobody wants to buy a house with a cranky neighbor next door. Like, that immediately has a cost too. So this is where they really, I mean, first and foremost, they need to work it out with the neighbor. Right? That would be the best solution, and then they need to try harder. And it might need to be a sit-down with this person.
So there's an update in bold on the bottom of this one, and it sounds like they've reached out to an attorney, and they said they'd provide more updates as they come. It's been 21 days, though I think, they went the legal route. It's a rock and a hard place, this one, because you want to talk down the neighbor, but the neighbor, I have a feeling, will only be talked down if they can buy the house. And at that point, it's far under market, and, you know, it's all a kind of a loss, which is, that is an uncomfortable situation to be in.
It is, and a good attorney could offer some solutions, including acting as a mediator, right? So this is where if you and this other party, you're the seller and this other party, have some longstanding dispute, don't get along, it may be time to have a professional negotiator, i.e. an attorney, come in and say, look, this is where we're at. I've been hired because of your interactions with potential buyers. And yes, it's a free country, but you are appears to be actively disparaging the sale of this property because of your own financial interest. And my clients are approaching legal remedies for that. Mm-hmm. And it's likely going to get expensive. We really need to continue this? So we have a request that you don't interact with any of the people that come to see the house. That's our request. And if you can honor that, it can stop at this point. But if you continue to persist in this behavior, we're going to escalate.
Yeah.
And my clients have reached an annoyance level where they've hired me. And I don't have a problem because I get paid more money to make things miserable. And if you want to do that, we can. And of course, lawyers have ethics as well. They can't make legal threats, but they certainly can, you know, inform the other party of where this could go.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with your initial solution, though, where it's you reach out to the agent showing the property and you say, hey, just so you know, the neighbor is pretty vocal. And
there's a downside to that. Yeah, there's a downside to that. And I wouldn't necessarily say pretty vocal. The person next door has tried to buy the property. And every time somebody comes to show it, or often when people come to show it, they say bad things because they're trying to buy the property. You may want to let your buyer know if that occurs, or you may want to limit that interaction because this person has a vested interest and they're trying to steal the property for a low price or whatever it is. But the first stage of this type of conflict is always try to work it out with the other side.
Yeah.
Directly, in person, appeal to them as a human being. But not everyone's rational. Not everyone can be talked to and work out a solution. And then there are additional steps you can take, and there may be even legal remedies to try to stop this from continuing to to damage your sale process.
Yeah. Okay. Next one.
And the agent can also act as an intermediary. Your listing agent can go over there and talk to her or them. I don't know if it's a male or female. Talk to them, or I don't know what their gender is. They can just go talk to the person who's causing an issue and try to work it out. The agent also can work this out. I have been known to incentivize the neighbors and incentivize tenants to result in a successful sale. I've often said to my clients, if your neighbor has a junk car parked in the driveway, maybe you should offer to pay to store it for a month or two and bring it back because it's not helpful to the sale process. Or if they're parking an RV in front of the driveway, right? It's an old RV. That's also not helpful to the sale process. And maybe they would be kind enough to park it somewhere else for a little while. And you can explain that it's nothing personal, and you could bring it back once the sale's closed. But a lot of people are going to be, you know, negatively judging this house because they see an older RV in front. And this neighbor could also say, look, I really don't want to do that because I'm going to bring the RV back. So I'd rather they see the house as is, right? So you can kind of, you know, work with your – the first step is always try to resolve directly. Second step is to try to bring in an intermediary. And third and final step is, in my opinion, is to get the lawyers involved. And at the end of the day, there may not be anything you can do. But at least you tried. Those would be the three steps I would take.
Yeah, at least worth trying, right? Doing something. And, I mean, they did. They posted to Reddit, so.
They did. They looked for group advice, which is cool.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Okay. Third.
By the way, question. If there's anything funny in the top responses when you're looking at this, if it's the top response is worth reading, feel free to tell us as long as it's not a book-length response, tell us what the top response was.
Okay, I will. Okay, selling my 2.9% house to upgrade. Am I being stupid? There's a few edits here, so I'm going to run through to the start of it.
You mean like updates in the post?
Mm-hmm. And they're poorly formatted, so it's difficult to read through it. Okay. Hello, Redditverse. I'm in a bit of a conundrum and wanted to share here and get some feedback. So at the very beginning of the pandemic, my wife and I decided to buy our first home despite all the uncertainty in the world. We found a 4-2, 2,900 square foot on a half-acre lot with a true two-car garage, a rarity in South Florida. We bought it for $530,000 and at a rate of 2.875. The house has great bones, but the previous homeowner didn't do much in the way of upgrades, and the ones they did do were cheap. Except for all new flooring, which they did a fantastic job on. But it didn't have any of the three big-ticket items that are necessary for South Florida. The roof is old, there's no impact windows, and there's no pool. Also, the kitchen and both bathrooms need to be renovated, and the garage could use some epoxy and built-ins. Because of the great price and the interest rate and the size of the house, we figured we'd be here a while and just do all of it ourselves. And since moving in, I have done a decent amount of work. However, the kitchen still needs a reno, the master bath still needs a reno, and the roof still needs to be redone. It's not leaking, but it's only a matter of time. I also would really like a pool. The current value of our home is probably between $800,000 to $900,000. The realtor is confident that they can get us at least $850,000, and I owe about $470,000. A little over a month ago, we welcomed our first child into the world. We weren't really looking, but we did stumble across a house in a neighborhood in an excellent school district where houses rarely come open. This is a 4-3, 2,300 square foot house that is completely renovated and has everything done. And I mean everything. brand new tech saltwater pool, Florida things, outdoor patio, 2018 roof, open kitchen, bathrooms have been renovated. It's got the windows, the epoxy garage, the lawn's been replaced with Astrock, if you've heard of that. And the school district is great. They listed it at $899,000 or $900K. But with all that's been getting, with all that's being done, we knew there was no way it was selling for that cheap. And sure enough, they were already getting offers at $1 million. It's by far the most expensive house in the development, but that's because no one is selling, and there's only been one prior sale in 23, which is a 509 square foot smaller, and the lot is also smaller. They went under contract for 1.02, and they're now wondering if they were stupid for doing this and should have just done the improvements at their current house and wrote it out. But they don't, yeah. That's essentially where it goes. They have 7 days for inspection and can pull out. So they keep going back and forth on it. Thanks in advance.
Yeah. What a nightmare. First and foremost, you make this decision before you write the offer, not after you write the offer. This is one of the reasons when we manage multiple offers, we try to give the parties that are submitting offers a cooling off period of let them sleep on it. Because it's so easy to let emotions drive the bus. And I think that's what's happening here is that they weren't really looking. So what is that? They stumbled into this house. How do you not really look and write an offer? Okay. So I don't know if I believe these people. What's this user's name?
Dolomite.
Dolomite. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's Dolomite is like a 70s era film that is what I think is called the era of blaxploitation movies from the 70s that were ridiculous and over the top way before your era. Actually, really before mine too, but something I know about. Funny username.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have been shopping if they weren't serious about buying the house. And now that they're under contract, they're looking to get out of it because they're not sure if it's a good financial decision. I mean, the contract probably protects their ability to do so, but the first and biggest problem is they probably should never have written the offer, and they should have made that decision before they went shopping. I mean, they're pretending that they didn't go shopping. It sort of reminds me when somebody's like, "No, somebody's cheating," and they're like, "I wasn't looking. It just sort of happened. This affair." I'm like, "No, come on, You cheated. Things just got. It didn't. Wasn't an accident. You put a house under contract.
So we're here now, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're trying to diminish. My point is, they're trying to diminish their responsibility by saying we weren't really looking. But the first question, of course, is what's the age of the. What's not the first question, but one of the questions is what's the age of the home that they currently own? Does it say?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask that question is that when you've got small children. One of the things you do want to think about is the environmental pollution, the environmental factors, the risk factors in the house, like lead-based paint.
VOCs.
VOCs too, but lead-based paint is what I'd be much more worried about because VOCs eventually, and I'm not an expert in these things, but VOCs can dissipate. You can also replace the carpet with low VOC. You could paint with low VOC. You can get rid of VOCs in some ways, but you can't get rid of lead-based paint completely. And if you're intending to remedy or remodel the home, while you have small children in the house, and it was built prior to 1978, you are likely going to have lead-based paint. And the moment you take a Sawzall or other power tool to drywall or paint, you are atomizing that lead-based paint, and you're going to end up ingesting it. Mm-hmm. And your children are going to, more importantly, are going to end up ingesting it, and it has horrible, horrible effects to developing brains. So with that said, that would be my first question, because if it turns out that home one is built in 1977 and home two is built in 2005, you have an environmental reason that you may want to seriously think about just going with a remodeled house and not and pay the upcharge, right? Money, it's hard to ignore money at, what did you say, 2%, 3%?
Yeah, 2.875%.
So you have $450,000 outstanding at 3%, and you're now talking about having, what, $600,000, $700,000 outstanding at 7%? Your monthly payment's going to be a massive difference. Yeah. And that's assuming your realtor is actually being honest and you can sell the house for, what did he say, at least $800,000, $700,000?
$800,000 to $900,000, confident at $850,000.
I mean, that. I hope they're... Let's say that's true. Something doesn't pass the sniff test, though, right? Like, why is their jalopy worth $850 and they only have to spend $1 million and change for a beautiful updated house? Are they different neighborhoods?
It sounds like
something's a little weird. Okay, yeah. Different neighborhoods now add up. I mean, this is one of those things where are you comfortable with doubling your mortgage payment? And are you comfortable... Like, your time is also valuable doing all these upgrades and doing these improvements to the old home. But don't kid yourself. You can replace the roof. You can replace the windows. You can put in a pool. You can do all the things that you say this house doesn't have. And so this is what I'm sensing is another thing I see people do, and you and I know this much better from car shopping.
Yeah.
And that's... You backfill the whole decision process with rationality, right? Like, they've already made the decision. And now they're trying to talk themselves into it. They know it's not necessarily a rational decision.
Yeah.
But they're trying to scramble for the rational reasons why this makes sense, all the while they're trying to make themselves not feel bad about their pattern of behavior by saying, oh, we weren't really looking. So they're trying to rationalize it, and if it makes sense, it makes sense. Odds are they've already made the decision to buy it. They already put it under contract, and they're probably going to go ahead and move through with the deal. But they should have had this entire pathway of discussion before they were out shopping, and I hope that their realtor is right about what they could sell their house for, because buying house number two and not being confident about the value of house number one can cost them a lot of money if it turns out their house isn't worth what they thought it is. One thing I want to add is that the buyers at the lower end of the price range, and this isn't particularly low, especially for Florida, but they tend to be much more sensitive to rates.
Mm. Yeah. So. Yeah. This is almost like a little bit of a financial advisor question when they start bringing in rates and monthly payment into it. But, you know, I'm looking here and you've got this jalopy that's at $850, say, and it's under-maintained and it's lacking renovations and whatnot, and they're rate is ridiculously low. I'm just thinking about sweat equity and the amount that they could pull out if they did all the things that they wanted to do from that first versus trade it out for a higher payment and a turnkey. Yeah. Especially we're talking neighborhoods or whatnot. It sounds like this jalopy's in a great neighborhood if it's already worth this much.
It sounds like it's in a better neighborhood.
Yeah.
A newer house that's a million and change. It's usually better to reinvest in the home you own. You don't pay transaction costs. You borrowed money. Your cost of capital is 3% versus 7% today, more than double.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the time to do the remodeling and manage the remodeling, you can customize it to exactly what you want instead of going with what somebody else decided was acceptable. But it's a lot of work managing contractors and subcontractors. And in this market, at least here in Colorado, everyone seems like they've jacked their rates through the roof for everything.
Yeah.
You can't get a plumber out for anything less than $500. That's the minimum now.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe it's personal, right? You know, they wanted the renovation and everything, but I think you and I are both fairly DIY-focused people, and so we're going to gravitate towards those types of answers.
Yeah.
Recognizing our own bias.
Well, it's one of these questions where you have to value your own time. And if they're raising a family and they're working busy jobs, do they really have the capacity to take on a remodel project?
Mm.
And will they do so with joy? Or was this going to be a miserable slog to remodel the old house? Because that has value too.
Yeah.
Right? And not... This is one of those things is the best alternative to not buying this house. You have to understand the value of that in order to make a decision to move ahead or not move ahead. And again, they should have made these kind of pathway choices before they were out shopping and writing offers. Sometimes you need to see a house or two and kind of have a straw man test on whether this makes sense before we've had many clients. I've had many clients over 21 years that start the process and decide, you know, they're just not the right time to buy a house. And sometimes they don't want to tell me the reasons,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it might be something personal, like their relationship's rocky. I've helped couples start to shop and then they broke up after, like, we saw six houses together, because that seeing six houses together forced the couple to have the conversation. Are they really in the serious relationship together or not? And it turns out they weren't. One of the two was dragging the other one to go look at houses. And we got to play therapist. So we do often unofficially play financial advisor, unofficially play therapist, And we warn our clients that that's not our professional role, but we still get dragged into these things. And it sounds very, it sounds like a shaky deal to me.
Yeah.
And an unwise financial decision. And what I tell my clients is if they decided they didn't want to buy the house or sell the house after we start the process and we help them reach that decision, we did our job. We didn't get paid for it because there was no closing, but in the end of the day, they'll refer us to other people. We will get paid eventually for that service. It just may not come in a linear fashion.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, you can sleep at night.
And I can sleep at night.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. Moving on.
So short answer, yes, you are crazy.
Yeah. Also, a pool in this climate? I don't know.
Pools are a headache to maintain. Go to the community pool.
Yeah.
Go find a community pool. Meet some friends. Like, if you don't have time, you know, you're raising a family. Pools are a lot of work.
You're in Florida. Isn't the ocean right there? I mean, I guess everything wants to eat you, but still.
No, there's tons of pools in Florida, everywhere in Florida, because the ocean's not right there.
Yeah. Okay. This next one may need some reading between the lines. Osman, I think your experience is going to shine on it. And this is by... I love you, Shia, a lot. So... shout out to Shia LaBeouf, I'm guessing. Not sure. The home we are interested in has sold 6 times in the past 10 years. Is this a major red flag? We're viewing this home on Saturday and have been so excited because this home seems like the right fit for us. But today, out of boredom, I looked at the property history and saw the home has been listed and sold 6 times in the past decade. This would be the 7th. Not sure if this home keeps getting flipped for investment purposes or if there is some red flag with the area or property where people decide they don't want to live there anymore. Is this something I should have my realtor ask the listing agent? And they included a link of the property history. Okay. One of the sales looks like it's just a quit claim, though it has lost $200,000 between 2014 to 2017, and then it's back up. So, interesting.
Short answer is yes, it's a red flag. 100%, it's a red flag. And the other thing that's interesting about this listing history is it's not all on the MLS. There's some public record sales. So some of these could be transactions that are private, one person selling it to their buddy. We don't really know. And the problem with asking the listing agent is that they're going to lie. If it's something bad, you have a high probability they're going to lie. And it's unlikely that there's something like a poltergeist, right? That's why the house keeps turning over. It's haunted. It's the Amityville Horror House. But your agent should be able to tell you what's wrong with this house before you write the offer. This is one of those things where whenever there's a house pattern like this that I see and there's actually a problem, I can tell my clients what the problem is before we even write the offer. Mm-hmm. And usually it's something like the floor plan is totally dysfunctional and doesn't have enough bedrooms. Like, where are you going to put the office? It's too close to a busy highway. The commute to this house is really long, or it's up in the mountains on a windy precipice. It's going to have a lot of exposure, and then the winters are going to be brutal up there. I hope you're okay with it. Like, your agent should be able to tell you what's wrong with this house. And if your agent can't tell you what's wrong, and it's not, you know, long days on market are not necessarily indicative of something wrong, but a pattern of selling over and over again 6 times in a decade is a lot of sales.
Yeah.
There's something odd about that. I mean, the good news is it keeps finding other buyers, but you can see if you look at this listing history that Hamish, if you look at this listing history, it goes up and then it goes down, right? Like, in the 2014 sale was 746, the 2016 sale was 700, by 5 months later it dropped to 560. Right, and then some of these are listings. So listed at 560, but then sold. So these people bought it in February of 2016 for 700, and then in July they listed it at 660. So they listed it 40,000 below what they bought it for 5 months earlier, and then it sold 6,000 below that number.
So this also has me wondering if it's like divorces or trusts or something, right?
Well, I helped my parents buy in Florida in 2013, 2000. No, it was 2012 maybe. And the market had been so pummeled and beat up by the global financial crisis that they were able to buy their house for less than half of what the original owner had bought the house for. You know, development had been so rampant, and then there was all this distressed selling, and a lot of these people that were selling, these were second homes that they paid for in cash, and the market was dead. There was listings everywhere, and they were able to negotiate a great deal and get a great house, and that house has more than doubled in value by far since they acquired it, and it's such a hot market they could put a sign in the yard and have it sold immediately. So the Florida market and these places like suburbs of Tampa are highly volatile versus out here in Colorado and Boulder, the market's not volatile. The downturn was very short after the global financial crisis, and it only affected really the higher end of the market. The entry level didn't drop very much at all. So this is where everything is local. This type of pattern where some people are losing hundreds of thousands of dollars is not very common. And then six sales over a very short period. There's a story here, and they should definitely do some investigation into this story until they feel comfortable, and certainly ask the listing agent, but I wouldn't expect to hear the whole story from them. You may, again, want to go to the neighbors, and the neighbors might tell you really what's going on, right? Like, did everyone discover it's a meth house?
Yeah.
And start feeling sick and need to sell it after 6 months?
Credit to this person, too, for asking this before going under contract.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that's not shown is how long did it take to sell on each of those listing periods. I guess it does say listed and sold. But there's only one of those. There's all these sales. It doesn't tell you how long it actually was on the market for. So if you're on the MLS itself, you can actually see how many days on market. You may have to do multiple searches of the listing to get the full data set, but you can figure out how long in each time period did it take to sell. Because that's another way that listing history is super useful. Because let's say it only sold three times in the last decade or three times in the last 20 years. But every time it was on the market, it took 6 months to sell. Well, that's a data point right there in terms of its market demand. And if it takes 45 days to sell each time, that's another data point, right? Which house would you rather have? And how long do you potentially have to write your offer, right? If you know it took 6 months to sell it, may not be going anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it might, but it's less likely than every time it hits the market, it's gone in a week. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, it's a red flag. Maybe it's a yellow flag, but it's yellowish red.
Let's find out the story and color in later.
Due diligence is a bottomless hole.
Yeah.
Meaning that you should do it until you feel comfortable. And when something appears like that, a pattern appears like that in the data, in your due diligence folder, your research, I think you absolutely should dig deeper, but you should take what you get with a giant grain of salt when it comes from the listing agent or the seller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Neighbors, once again.
Yeah. Neighbors are very, but they don't always tell you the truth either, but you can continue to gather information and find out what's going on. I mean, let's talk about all the different reasons it could be this, right? Maybe it's a sexual predator that lives next door.
Yeah, in our state, right, we have Megan's Law, where you have to disclose.
I'm not an expert in Megan's Law, but if I'm not mistaken, that's a law where you have to tell the police where you live, and the police tells the community where you live.
Okay.
But once it's been disclosed, is it something that, like, you as a home seller are not obliged to say my neighbor is a sex offender? So unless the buyer is doing that due diligence, calling the police department, looking at those lists, they'll never know. And I will add, by the way, that even the original, and I think this is that law, and I apologize if I'm thinking of a different law. You just brought up Megan's Law, but there is a law. The person who created that law, or at least advocated it, one of the key people, now regrets it because of the misuse of public disclosure laws around sex offenders, because people even with very low-level sex offender status that could have been teenagers, you know, dating another teenager and having an adult relationship with another teenager.
Public urination.
Could permanently have this on their record and have to go disclose everywhere they live, and it may not be a thing at all. So, but still, I mean, if you are buying a house, this is something you should definitely know about.
Yeah. Shall we move
especially
on?
If you have vulnerable vulnerable people in your household. Yeah, let's move on. That's fine.
Okay. Yep. Can I fire my realtor? My house went live today.
Hold on. Who's the user?
Vaping the user C.
Vaping C.
Yeah.
Okay.
Vitamin C, I'm assuming. My house went live today.
Okay.
My house went live today. My realtor had a photographer go to the house yesterday for photos. As soon as I saw the listing, I just about had a stroke. There were maybe five photos. None of the brand new bathroom or anything upstairs for that matter. I grabbed my phone and looked at the security footage from yesterday, and sure enough, there's my realtor with some girl who's taking pictures with her cell phone. He also had it listed as a foreclosure. I'm beyond pissed, and I think he's incompetent. Can I fire him and find a realtor who knows what they're doing, or would he be able to sue me for breach of contract? Do you want the update now or after?
I'm looking at it. That's okay. The same question. So I got the update. I'll read the update. I spoke with my attorney this morning and he called my realtor. I signed the separation agreement and there will be no penalties on my part. Thank you so much for your advice. I'm in the process of hiring a new realtor with an established firm. Thank you all so much. there's a lot of incompetency in this industry and a lot of people go with somebody that they maybe they're in their friend's circle. And maybe this person has hung their license with what appears to be a reputable brand. And they think, okay, well, this person must know what they're doing. And they may have no idea what they're doing. And their idea of a professional photographer might be their girlfriend with a cell phone. So we at House Einstein, we have a whole process before we bring a listing to market. And this process has been developed over 20 years. And now we review all of the marketing materials before it goes live with our client to make sure they approve of the photography. They approve of the listing description. They double check all the listing details to make sure it's accurate. And then most importantly, we do one deep, deep dive right before going active into the competition to make sure we're pricing it right. And that's the only way to sell a house. And I don't understand realtors that or real estate agents that throw a dart at a price point and that use cell phone photography, that have horrible listing descriptions. And there's so many examples of this that we could spend hours just laughing and looking at listings and laughing about them. And that's probably why the Real Estate Ethics Board with the NAR, the National Association, says you shall not disparage active listings because it would be too easy. It'd be like shooting fish in a barrel. And they really don't want to see real estate agents taking each other down a notch. But this is 100%, I think, an opportunity to fire your agent for incompetency. And hiring an attorney was probably the right way to go because it would have been maybe a fight with the listing agent if you hadn't have done those things, mm-hmm. hadn't have hired an attorney. And I'm paying a few $100 for an attorney to let the listing agent know that this contract is terminated and we need you to sign this agreement. And if you don't, it's going to get bad.
Yeah.
We're going to file a complaint and we're going to be in a dispute over this. And any real estate agent, even a bad one that gets called by an attorney by their client is going to be like, you know, I think I should let this go because clearly we can't even communicate to each other. You have to call your lawyer on me. I think, yeah, you're right. We should let it go.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, that becomes a big deal quick.
Yeah. Now, with that said, okay, I got to back up that every real estate listing agreement's different. Every state is different. And whether you have legal grounds or not to fire your realtor is going to depend on your contract. And I can't comment on a contract that I don't even know if it's in our state, but I can comment on the level of incompetency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
And, you know, in our state, we have holdover periods and a few other things in our listing agreement where, you know, you are kind of in within a specific date range, though at the same time, most agents worth their salt, if you have an issue and you bring it up, you can mutually be released from the contract, you know?
Maybe. I don't know if I agree with you, Hamish, that it depends on the legitimacy of the issue, the scale of the broken... the business issue and the legal issue are two different things.
Mm.
If you have a mistrusted relationship with your principal as an agent and the home seller can't communicate, really you should let this person go. Because if you have such a broken relationship, and that's a business decision, not a legal decision.
Okay.
The legal side of this comes into play when there's a dispute. it's just sad that there's agents out there that do such little work and unfortunately didn't know what they were doing. And I don't know what else to say about that other than to separate the business and the legal issue first and foremost. And agents that have a client that don't trust them, that they've broken, the container of the relationship is broken, forcing somebody to complete a transaction with you that doesn't trust you is a horrible idea. Like, you're just going to end up with ridiculously bad reviews. Even if you are successful in selling the property, it's going to be a mess from soup to nuts, and it's a waste of everyone's time. So first, if you're in that situation as a seller or as a client, buyer or seller, or if you're an agent and it feels like your relationship with your real estate agent is troubled, the first thing to do is try to fix it. If it's clear it can't be fixed, the container and trust cannot be reestablished, it's better to just let them go, irrespective of what the exclusive agreement says, from a business decision perspective, not from a legal perspective.
Right. Yeah, that's my mistake.
Yep.
Okay, I think our final one, you ready?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Vineman420 asks, unethical or even illegal? I own a vacation property in a resort area. My elderly neighbor next door recently told me her husband had died and she was going to sell. She had contacted a realtor to list it and was thinking of $175,000 as the list price. I was looking for an investment and offered her $160,000 in a private sale where she could avoid the realtor commission. I saw her a few days later and she told me her realtor bought the condo, so it was no longer available. So I looked up the sale price a few weeks later and the realtor paid $110,000, which is at least $50,000 below market value. She has Alzheimer's. I think what the realtor did was at least unethical, or is it possibly illegal?
So I just wanted to check in on some of these details here. So, these price points are pretty low compared to Boulder, but the principles are all the same. So the neighbor was looking to sell at 175.
Yes.
And this person has a direct relationship with the seller. So the seller told them the husband had died and she was going to sell, and that she was going to list it at 175. And this person, user Vineman420, offered her 160 in a private sale where she could avoid realtor commission. So he offered it to her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first, if she'd already listed it, the real estate commission may have been a moot point. It may not have even been negotiable. But and only a few days later, she said, "No, my agent bought it." And when this potential buyer, Vineman420, looked it up, the sale price was $110,000, which was at least $50,000 below market value. It's what he was willing to pay for it, and she has Alzheimer's. So 100%, if all of what he shared is true, it's unethical and illegal, right? It's elder fraud or elder abuse to take advantage of someone who has Alzheimer's, period. I don't know where else you could go with that other than, yeah, that sounds wrong. Now, it's possible he has the facts wrong,
yeah.
Right? That the data is not that it's 110, that he really paid more. And it's not uncommon that the tax assessor and Zillow have the wrong data. But if it was listed, that should be on the MLS. And he also, Vineman can file a complaint with the National Association's local board if this person is a realtor, and even if they're not a realtor, he could file a complaint with the regulatory body in their state. And he certainly also could contact her family members to verify, because if he actually made an offer, he has it in writing, right? Did he actually offer 160, or did he just say, I would pay 160 for that?
Yeah. And not
that's the other question, right? Did he really make an offer? Or did he just in kind of hearsay say I would pay 160? But it doesn't matter. Even if the property truly was worth 160, and this realtor, and again, this is what that's in the post, is described as a realtor, paid 110, they have a really strong case against this realtor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gets sticky, I think, especially when you bring Alzheimer's into the mix too, because it's how do you know that you're having the same general conversation with the person as it goes, right? And kind of how far along they are It's difficult because they may have a case, but at the same time, the realtor and her could have already had an agreement even, and had everything completely figured out. But there's just so much. I imagine at that point you probably want a power of attorney or somebody working on your behalf to make sure you get what you can.
Well, I mean, this is one of the biggest reasons why I am skeptical and hesitant of the wholesaling industry. Because in my opinion, they prey on people who don't know the true value of their real estate. And whether it's because of a health issue like Alzheimer's, or it's simply that they are not knowledgeable about the market, our society allows people to be taken advantage of. And maybe they don't have the knowledge or the experience. Maybe they're ignorant of market conditions, or maybe they have a mental health issue. Either way, I find it pretty unethical to steal property from people. I don't know how it's not pretty. It's unethical.
Yeah.
And so it's just wrong, right? Especially with people that are vulnerable, elderly people. But even if it's somebody that is of average intelligence and just didn't know it was worth 160 and sold it for 110, I mean, you didn't know the real value of what you got, right? And some people take pride in scamming other people, right? Like getting a deal and taking advantage of somebody, and that just doesn't feel right.
No.
To me.
Yeah.
But when they're vulnerable, it's just gross. Honestly, it's disgusting. I don't know what else to say. Taking advantage of somebody who's elderly and has Alzheimer's, if it's true, is disgusting, and this person should lose their license.
Yeah. And if they're a realtor, you know, there's a whole another ethics board and everything that they're very
there's
much
a code
against.
Of conduct that realtors have to adhere to, and ethics complaints are very serious. And they're taken seriously by the National Association and by local boards. And you 100 if they are a realtor, you can report them on that front, and you should. And even if they aren't a realtor, you should file a complaint with whatever regulatory body is involved. And you certainly should talk to the family members. And if it's true, you know, the family members can take it from there and file a suit, file a complaint, and try to get the money back, because that's fraudulent behavior. If it's true, you actually offered 160. Like, did you actually put that in writing?
Yeah, verbal offer is a bit different, right?
And if you know she has Alzheimer's, why are you offering somebody with Alzheimer's? Why are you not talking to the person who's making decisions for her? Why aren't you saying, can I talk to your family members? If you already knew she had Alzheimer's.
Right, it brings up...
There's something strange about this story that's very one-sided. I feel like there's some key information missing.
Yeah. And I granted, you know, Vineman's probably hurt that they didn't get their offer, and so they're slanting the story, you know. But at the same time, yeah, there's a lot of like question marks on this one.
Maybe the house had a bad foundation, Hamish, and that wasn't known. The guy wrote the $160,000 offer. Like, there could be facts missing.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the part it's very easy to condemn this real estate agent that we don't know. But I suspect there's two sides to this story. And if it's true, this person behaved unethically, they deserve to lose their license. And frankly, they may even deserve more than that. I think it's criminal with somebody that is, in a vulnerable group of people that is vulnerable to take advantage of them.
Yeah. Personally, at face value.
I mean, maybe it's not criminal in their jurisdiction. It just sounds criminal to me.
Yeah, I personally criminal, right? No, face value, 100%, I agree. Unethical and potentially illegal. Though there's, you know, reading between the lines. Curious on the full story there.
And just gross. Disgusting. I don't know what else to say about it.
Also,
it's disgusting to see somebody do that.
Unrelated to the story somewhat, but a resort area and 160K. I don't know of a resort area.
I mean, it's possible. It's possible. There are places throughout the country that have there are like lakes that are not on the, you know, in the middle of the country, that are not next to major cities, that are considered a resort market for the area. I mean, I don't know what market they're talking about. It sounds like a screaming deal, but I remember doing a cross-country drive, and there was some lake resort town we stopped at on this cross-country drive, and we were getting like dollar beers and 50-cent wings. It felt like it was the 70s or something. I'm like, what is happening? And the whole town was like that, and it was a little resort area that was aiming at a lower price demographic, lower end market that liked a vacation, and that was the going rate in that town at the time. So yeah, it's possible it's a resort area.
I snooped. It's Illinois.
Yeah, that sounds like Illinois to me.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Cool. So we've been an hour into this. We're at about an hour on the clock. I thought this was kind of fun. Maybe we'll look at doing this every month or two, kind of assemble a list of questions that we cull from Reddit, situations we culled from Reddit, and can discuss. But for now, it's Memorial Day weekend, and this is a really special weekend throughout our country, but especially here in Boulder with the Boulder coming up. It's a time to honor those that paid the ultimate sacrifice for our country. And I think that it's also a time to connect with friends and family and barbecue. I have family here in town that are visiting from out of town, so I think it's time we get back to it. But I wanted to thank everyone for listening to this podcast. If you made it to the end, look us up at houseeinstein.com, especially if you're thinking about buying or selling real estate here in Boulder or in Denver or in the mountains. We are expanding and growing and love what we do. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, perhaps we're a good fit. So look us up at houseeinstein.com.
All righty. Thank you, everyone. And take care.
Thanks.